Ask most men to give you a list of their closest friends, and you're likely to get a blank stare. Why? Here's author and speaker John Vauder.
What I say to men is understand that if you don't have any friends, then you're putting yourself above Jesus Christ because he needed friends, or you don't understand who he was as he walked the earth. Secondly, I say to them, you have to take a risk, and it depends on the moment and the day. We have to be open, we have to be vulnerable, and we have to ask ourselves the question, is this person going to help me become more conformed to the image of Christ?
This is Family Life Today. Our host is the president of Family Life, Dennis Rainey, and I'm Bob Lapine. We're going to talk today about men and the importance of friendships. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. When you were in high school, do you have a best friend?
Yep.
What was his name?
Kim.
Kim?
Kim and I were part of all kinds of
mischief.
That's the kind word. I was just
misdemeanor.
Thinking of
that would be the...
I was thinking of that, too, and I was also thinking of... Yeah. I mean, one of the all-time best stories about my buddy Kim and I is we decided we were going to have a drag race. And both of our parents were gone. We were out in the country, and we got his pickup truck and my pickup truck. This made a lot of sense.
Drag racing with
on a gravel
drag.
Road.
Yeah.
On a gravel road. Okay.
Right.
And we decided we're going to go down through there. And of course, I don't remember who won. All I remember is he rolled the pickup truck, was not hurt. I don't know. It was a miracle. He could have been killed in the deal, but his head popped out of it. And then we started thinking, how do we turn this thing back on all four wheels and roll it back to where it belongs? But we did. Somehow.
You pushed the truck over.
We somehow pulled that truck back over.
If there are any children listening to today's program, Mr. Rainey is very sorry about what he did.
Mr. Rainey is embarrassed about his foolishness.
It was foolish, yes. So
really
do not
was.
Follow Mr. Rainey's example.
We pushed it back up into the barnyard where it had been, and then we made up this yarn that some thieves had come by and had stolen it. And of course, being teenagers, your stories you just don't think through all the nuances.
They leaked. The story leaked from the start.
It was bad. It was bad. The good thing was no one was hurt, but Kim was a good friend.
How did you and Kim become friends?
I just say we grew up together, enjoying sports together and going hunting and fishing and hanging out together.
Just over time, common interests, things you like together. And do you know where he is today?
We kind of lost track with one another. He went to Vietnam and saw him a couple of times after that, but haven't hung out with him since.
Mm.
But, you know, here's the thing, Bob. The friends that seem to last the longest. Now, I'm not saying this is automatically true, but a lot of them start in college.
Mm.
Who you begin to hammer out your experiences with in college or perhaps in your first vocation, it really has been true of me that some of the guys that I still, not a lot, but some that I'm still close with occurred back in those days.
Well, and I've found that common interests are one thing, but a common faith and common convictions, those really take a relationship deeper than the surface.
And I'll tell you this, the one thing I've found true of all friendships between men is that they're difficult. And we have a couple of friends with us in the studio, a new friend and an old friend, Dr. John Vauder and Dr. Jim Weatherby join us on Family Life Today. Jim, John, welcome back to the broadcast.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
Glad to be here.
John Vauder is a friend. He goes way back to the Campus Crusade for Christ when it was named that. He served on the staff for 10 years with Crew. He has been a pastor, seminary president, has written a couple of books, is a speaker. He and his wife, Susan, have been married for 43 years, and he's collaborated with Jim to write a book called Achieving High Performance Friendship, which is a book for men. Jim has been a professor at the University of Minnesota, University of Houston, University of Memphis, currently at Texas Tech University. Has written more than 30 books, married to his wife, Bryn, for 8 years. And I want to know how you guys started your friendship. I mean, you talk in the book about getting a good start or selecting a friend or choosing a friend. How'd you guys choose each other?
Well, I learned about John from my mother. We had moved up to Minnesota, and I was not really attending church at the time, and my mother and father moved up so they could be nearby and we could take care of them. And she started promoting this pastor, John Vodder. Now, to me, that was a negative because my mother was one of those people who just really took faith at a very, very easy level. So I figured John would not be my kind of pastor. Mm. I remember one time my mother broke her leg and the night getting up to get some water. And she said to me, but the Lord was looking out for me because I fell near the phone so I could call for help. Now, in my mind, I'm a computer guy. I think very logically. I'm thinking, no, I don't think that's how it worked, because if God was looking out for you, you might not have fallen in the first place.
You wouldn't have broken your leg, yeah.
So at any rate, the fact that she liked John Vodder meant he was probably kind of one of those pie-in-the-sky type of pastors.
You weren't interested in God, let alone a pastor.
Well, I was interested in God, but I just hasn't found pastors that would preach in the more pragmatic, logical way that I needed to hear it, the message that would work for me.
Right.
But actually, my mother was right. She knew me, and she was spot on that John would be good. I went to his church and immediately was drawn to him. I quickly realized this is a guy that's very pragmatic. He's very practical. And I saw him as someone, because I deal with a lot of CEOs in my consulting and speaking and so forth. And I said, this guy could be a business executive. And I just found that his messages had good progression of thought and logic. And so I approached him and just started having conversations with him and found him to be very authentic and someone I could learn from.
John, do you remember the first time Jim approached you and had a conversation with you?
Yeah, what was it you said earlier that he came up and said what?
Well, he said to me, if all the people who sleep in your sermons were laid end to end, they'd be more comfortable.
So he started off with a little smack talk to start the relationship.
No, that's
huh?
actually a joke, but I never tell anyone that's a joke. But to answer your question, I don't remember the first time I met him, but I told a story in a sermon that when I was 15, a man propositioned me sexually, and he was the uncle of one of my best friends in school, and I didn't tell anyone for 14 years. And so the sermon was the first time I had stated that publicly, and I just said he propositioned me. Jim came up afterwards and said, that man sexually abused you. And I said, no, he didn't. He propositioned me. So we were like two junior high kids, abuse, proposition. But that was the start of it, because I realized I could respect and trust Jim because he was willing to come up to correct me and confront me and doing it in a loving way.
Now, that's interesting. The start of a relationship, because he was a guy who was willing to correct and confront. We don't typically think of correction and confrontation as the seedbed for a great relationship.
Right. And then one day he called my office, and when the call came through, he said, may I tell you something? And I said, yes. And he said, when I called the church, I asked for you. The receptionist said, I'll put you through. I thought I was coming to you, and I came to your assistant, who said, John Vodder's office. And he said, you may want to correct that because it's a little bit rude. I thought I was coming straight to you. And I realized that he cared enough about me and cared enough about our ministry and the way we were perceived by people that he would tell me about that professionally and give me that professional courtesy. And I thought, this is a man I'm going to like. This is a man I'm going to see if we can develop a relationship, a friendship, and it's grown since then.
You guys came together to write this book. You had to write it because of a common conclusion that I've come to, and because I've read your book, I've come to as well. Men don't achieve friendships easily. They can live a lifetime, many men, and not have truly a single friend who is truly an intimate friend. Am
correct.
I right?
That's correct. And most of the men to whom I talk say, I have no friends, or I have few friends, and I have few friends with whom I can share. And so that's the purpose of the book, is to help men understand how Jesus modeled friendship when he was here on earth, and then to help men know how to begin developing friendships.
There are women who are listening to us right now, and they're going, I've observed this. I've watched this. Why is it men don't have those kind of friendships?
Well, I think part of it is our society. Somehow our society teaches men to be competitive, to be like gorillas in the jungle beating our chest, I'm bragging, my high school 50-year reunion, I had a better time talking to the women than I did the men, because the women want to talk seriously about life. They want to talk about their marriages. They want to talk about their kids. And a lot of the guys were still competing, because I think it's our culture that says men simply compete. They don't relate to one another, and they don't tell one another they care for one another and love one another.
The Bible starts out affirming that presupposition. Genesis chapter 4, Cain and Abel.
Yes.
They were competing. Ultimately, it resulted in murder. Now, that's two brothers, but it's two men relating to each other. We typically don't want to give another man competitive advantage, do we?
Sure. There's a dynamic of being macho. Big boys don't cry. Showing your vulnerability shows weakness. And it's always amazing. John and I have wonderful wives, and the way they can just connect with other women so quickly around issues such as children and feelings, and they're just very open very quickly. But men are much more guarded, and that just doesn't provide the accessibility. And that's, in fact, the reason I called John at his church and talked to him about that, is John projected himself as being a very accessible person, but trying to reach him through the church felt like I was trying to reach a CEO, and that was inconsistent with what John projected. That's why I shared with him, are you aware this is happening to people when they call in? And he actually wasn't aware of it.
Hmm. Jim, you strike me as a fairly competitive guy. I mean, you're in an academic environment where competition's a kind of the part of the way of life there. Avocationally, you like to race fast cars.
Yes.
There's a competitive side to you, right?
Sure.
So have you had to overcome that, or how has this relational dynamic with other guys been cultivated with you?
I was fortunate, I guess, and John and I have talked about why do we have so many friends, and we both just realized we needed friends. And in order to have friends, you have to, there's a give and take, and that was just something natural that happened. So you can be competitive and still have friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's not inconsistent. In fact, it's fun to have a competitive rivalry where you can share, and you know, there's the old saying, if you want to play better tennis, play tennis with a better tennis player. So you can have that type of friendship where you're helping each other grow. And the same can be true of how you're just growing as an individual. The greatest thing is to have a friend that when they give you feedback about yourself, whether it's about the way you're handling a work situation or a personal situation or a spiritual situation.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, one of our litmus tests, if I don't question for a second that you're telling me this out of love and caring, then that makes that extremely useful feedback. Not getting good feedback is like hitting golf balls in the dark. You just don't know how you're doing. And so if you have reliable friends who's come to you from a position of love and caring, and they can share with you observations they're making that can be helpful to you, because we're more effective if we see ourselves, others are seeing us, that helps us grow.
You know, in Genesis chapter 2, God came to Adam and said, it's not good that you be alone, and he made a helper suitable for him. I think where you're starting here in talking about how men have to admit that they do need friends,
yes,
is a great starting point. What would you say to the guy who's listening and goes, you know, I don't think I need friends?
We say that Jesus Christ is the model for friendship. And for me, the paramount point of his life is when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane after he had left the upper room. He's now praying before he's arrested. And we know what he was saying to the Father. We know what he was thinking, because he allowed three of his closest friends, Peter, James, and John, to be close enough to hear what he was saying and what he was praying. Then he said to them, this is my translation, I need you with me. He comes back to them, and they've fallen asleep. And he says, can't you stay with me for a short while? So Jesus was modeling that we should not be alone. And here he was the God-man, the savior of the world, the teacher of the world. And he was saying, I don't want to be alone at this time. This is the worst moment in history. I am beginning to deal with the sin of the world. So if Jesus needed not to be alone, then we need not to be alone. If I could just give you one example, Jim and I flying in to be with you two men, a man sitting in front of us thought we were talking too loudly and turned around and said, could you girls be quiet? Called us girls. And I didn't hear what he said, but I knew by the look on Jim's face that he had said something, and I said, what did he say? And he said he called us girls. I don't think either one of us would be very pretty women, so he missed on that point. But I knew I needed to say something, so when we landed, I said to him, put my hand over the seat and said, I'm sorry if we ruined your sleep. And I said it was really important that these two men, because the other man we had just met on the plane, talked to one another. And he apologized for what he said. And I said, well, I understand you called us girls. And he said, yeah, that's how my father told people to be quiet. But it was interesting, later on, Jim said to me, you handled that very well. I'm proud of you. And I didn't understand how I had handled it well. I just tried to defuse the situation. So I said, why? Well, then later Jim said to me, you know, I tried to pay you a compliment, but instead of asking me how did I handle it well and thanking me, you said why, which sounded like a competitive word. I wouldn't have known that I had done that, except that Jim cares enough about me to say the way you handled it, my compliment was not a good way to handle it. Hmm. And I think that's what high-performance friends do for one another.
You know, I agree with you. And I started reflecting upon the number of friends that I have in my life. And you have a great quote in your book. The guy has to be French because I can't pronounce it. He said, a true friend is the most precious of all possessions and the one we take the least thought about acquiring. Hmm. Now, I might argue about what the most valuable possession might be, but a friend, two men who are truly friends, are really valuable in one another's lives. I would not be the man I am today without a number of men who have sharpened me and built into my life. One of them sitting right here, Bob Lapine. I mean, you can't work together for 20 years and not be either sharpened or dulled by the guy. And I promise you, it has not resulted in becoming dull. If I'm dull, it wasn't because of Bob. But the point is, friends really do what the Proverbs talk about, as iron sharpens iron.
Yes. You know, I had a Sunday school teacher that talked about getting hooked on pornography. And I was absolutely stunned because this, to me, was someone who just had God's fingerprints all over him. And I just would have never anticipated. I was so surprised he was willing to share that in a Sunday school class. And he talked about how he had a friend that he said, I need to deal with this, so I want you to hold me accountable. And there's a lot of research that shows that people who really go down the wrong path don't have someone who calls them on their behavior. And so he actually reached out to someone and said, I want you to check with me on a regular basis and call me on that so that I know I'll have to answer to you as a friend about any activity in that area. And he said that was a thing that really helped me get past that. And so it's so nice to be able to reach out to someone and say, I need coaching, I need growth in this area, and feel comfortable that they will do it from a place of love and caring, as opposed to just being judgmental and critical.
When I was shooting video interviews for the Stepping Up video series that we put together, one of the guys I talked to was Pastor James McDonald in Chicago. And interestingly enough, he did his doctorate work on James 5, the verse that says, confess your sins one to another and be healed. And he looked at it in the context of men's friendships,
yes,
men in relationships. And one of the things he said in the interview, and it's a part of what we talk about in the Stepping Up video series, he talked about the fact that men are not naturally inclined toward the kind of self-disclosure, the kind of transparency and vulnerability that is a part of healthy friendships. They need to have it modeled for them, and they need to see it reciprocated. If a guy, he said, comes forward and says, I need to confess something, he said the other guy better pretty quickly confess back. He said, because if the other guy goes, oh, man, that's too bad, it's like you've just shut off the faucet. I'm never telling you again. It's almost like we have to have this shared trust. We have to open up our lives to one another before we can feel safe.
You're hitting on an issue I want these guys to comment on, and that is I think a lot of guys want that friendship in their soul. They have a longing to both know and be known, but they do not know how to get started. So like Bob's illustrating here, they may become transparent with someone who doesn't know how to handle it, and so they retreat or they shut back down. What would you say to the guy who's saying, yeah, I'd like to start a friendship. I'd like to go deeper in my relationships with men?
Well, I would say, first of all, and I want to go back to Jesus again, that I think he was open. And just an example we all know about where he healed 10 lepers and only one came back to say thank you. And Jesus said, I thought I healed 10. How come only one came back? Seemed like that was very open, very vulnerable moment in his life, what he did in the garden when he was praying. So what I say to men is understand that if you don't have any friends, then you're putting yourself above Jesus Christ because he needed friends, or you don't understand who he was as he walked the earth. Secondly, I say to them, you have to take a risk. And it depends on the moment and the day. But I recently met a man that I really liked, and I thought this could be a friendship. And so I asked him out for Coke or lunch, whatever it was. And he said, I'll get back to you. He's never gotten back to me. So I realized that that relationship is not going anywhere. In fact, it's not a relationship. But I thought it could be a relationship with a man that I could trust who could help me grow. So the first thing I say is that we have to take a risk. We have to be open. We have to be vulnerable. And we have to ask ourselves the question, is this person going to help me become more conformed to the image of Christ?
So did you feel a little rejected by no follow-up? And does it make you think I'm not asking another guy to do that?
No, I feel good enough about myself that it didn't bother me, just that I thought this was a relationship that could have benefited both of us. On the other hand, I met a man last fall working on a committee for a men's conference in Phoenix where I live, and had the same sense about him, so I asked him if we could have lunch, and we're on the way to becoming great friends. In fact, we use the phrase, if you think about the Catholic Church, when we want to talk very privately, we will say, and confidentially, we will say to one another, may we step into the confessional for a moment, understanding that what we're going to say needs to stay there in the confessional, and we've really relied on one another in a couple of situations.
You really talked about two things. One, admitting your need. Secondly, taking the risk. And I would add a third to it, and then a practical application to what we're talking about. I think after you admit that need and take the risk, you have to begin in some kind, and I think this is just true of guys, we have to begin the journey somewhere around doing something together. It may be athletics, it may be a Bible study, it could be a small group. And here's where I go back to what you helped create, Bob, the Stepping Up video series, where a guy could step out and get a handful of guys in a small group. But I want to promise you something. The questions that are in that small group, by the time you finish 10 sessions together, you're going to know some guys at a level way beyond the casual conversation where you're talking about sporting events and the weather and how things are going at work. You're going to know what some guys really think. What's the most courageous thing they've ever done? You're going to know about their steps of faith they've taken. But it doesn't occur all at once. It occurs in bite-sized pieces, kind of enables guys to get their feet in the water and then begin to ease on in. And I think it's where a lot of guys are picking up some incredibly valuable friendships for their lives. They're going to benefit them for the long haul.
Well, that's one of the goals. I mean, as you look at the Stepping Up video series, one of the goals is to help guys understand God's design for them as men. But there's another objective, and that's to help them develop those kinds of relationships that they're going to need throughout a lifetime if they're going to walk with God.
And a book like what Jim and John have written here is going to be incredibly instructive at helping guys beginning to understand what's taking place inside of me as I venture out into these, as John talked about, these risky relationships. Because any relationship is risky.
Yeah. You go to our website at familylifetoday.com, and there is information there about how to order copies of the book that John and Jim have written together called Achieving High Performance Friendships. Again, you'll find it online at familylifetoday.com. And speaking of the Stepping Up video series, we are hoping this fall that some of our listeners, and I say some of our listeners because I've already talked this week about the fact that we have somewhere between 250 and 350,000 men who listen to Family Life Today every day. Now, what if 1% of those guys, 2,500 guys, 1% of you would call us this week and say, you know what, I am, I would be willing to take 10 of my friends through the Stepping Up video series that you guys have put together. Guys from church, maybe you can get together with a group of guys from work and do this before work hours. Maybe it's fathers and teenage sons going through it together. But if 1% of our male listeners to Family Life Today would call 1-800-FL-TODAY this week and say, I'll take 10 guys through this material this fall, that'd be 25,000 men or more taken through this material, trained, equipped, discipled in what it means to pursue biblical manhood. So call 1-800-FL-TODAY if you have any questions. That's 1-800-358-6329. And we encourage you to be back with us again tomorrow. We'll continue to talk to John Vauder and Jim Weatherby about high-performance friendships among guys. Hope you can tune in for that. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, and our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. See you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas. Help for today, hope for tomorrow.